Yeah, I have no beef. I have no beef with Babs.
Okay. Guys, Babs is back. Babs, are you wearing your poppy today? You got a pin to your lapel? Your private school lapel jacket?
Private school lapel jacket. Get out of here, man.
You guys are going to have to explain that one to me. I'm not sure what a poppy is.
What's a poppy? It's a flower.
And it's used to commemorate lost troops on this day of commemoration, the 11th of November.
Ah, World War One anniversary. Okay.
I never knew that until today.
You guys have Veterans Day here.
I know, but it's like veterans, all veterans, not like World War One veterans. Like, what? How special are they?
It is all veterans, pretty much. But it's today. This year is the 100th year anniversary since the armistice. So,
okay, I did see somebody spell armistice horribly wrong yesterday. Guys, there was a big knockout in Manchester that we need to talk about. Third round, Ricky Barnes knocks out. Who was he fighting again? Does anyone remember? Because everyone's mind was wiped of the undercard, which featured a lot of stoppages.
Scott Cardle fans M cry at the moment. You're making his fans very upset. Anyway, continue.
You mean his only three fan of them. Is his dad?
Yeah, all three of them. Tony Bellew and Oleksandr Usyk met in the main event, and the fight played out perfectly. I'll explain that to you guys. You had Tony Bellew, who's the local hero. He's a fan favorite. He's flawed. Everyone knows he's flawed, but he makes up for it. He's got heart, and he's got determination, and he's got experience, and he's been on the big stage before. He's got all of the intangibles that if you look over at Usyk, you don't see. Now, it might be obvious when you look at Usyk, he has all of the other things like, you know, skill and footwork and speed and et cetera, but Bellew came out and for whatever reason or whatever excuse, whether you hear it from Bellew's side or Usyk's side, he was impressive. He was impressive. And immediately, the story of the fight, to quote Max Kellerman, as you two both love, the story of the fight became clear. And you can disagree all you want, okay? You can disagree. But Tom, let me tell you something. In presidential debates, among other things, I'll specifically use the example of a presidential debate. They say statistics have proven that the first 3 minutes are the most important in terms of what will become the next day narrative. And in a boxing match, you can take the first 3 minutes or the first three rounds. And what we saw was that in those opening moments, those crucial and pivotal moments, Tony Bellew was hanging with Oleksandr Usyk. And not just hanging, but at times, he was beating him to the punch. He quite possibly swept the first three rounds, if not won most of the first six rounds. He had Usyk scared. He had Usyk shook. He had Usyk hesitant and unwilling to just step in and trade. And, you know, that's the narrative, right? And I said that it played out perfectly. I'll explain the perfect part. The perfect part is basically that Eddie Hearn has this big-time fight for Usyk. He signs in for this two-fight deal, or they have some two-fight deal with, you know.
It's a three-fight deal.
Whatever. A three-fight deal. It's now two. But basically, the understanding is that Usyk will get a shot at the crown jewel of matchroom boxing, Anthony Joshua. And it looked like early that Usyk was barely hanging with Bellew. And should the fight have played out that way, and maybe Usyk squeaked out a decision, that the fight with Joshua loses its luster. It really does. But on the other hand, Usyk knocks out Bellew. Damn near knocked him out of the ring. Almost made Eddie Hearn cry. And now Usyk wins, and the narrative shifts. And for Usyk, it shifts to like how great of a knockout that was and his chances at heavyweight. And for Bellew, he looks like a guy who defied the odds. Babs, what's your take on the fight?
So I agree with you with the ending that.
Yes, he did get knocked out. That wasn't for up for debate.
I want to contest that personally.
I think it stopped early, to be honest. And so I agree with the kind of the ending played out perfectly for everyone involved, including the promoter.
Hold
the
on, can I pause you for a second? I just want to throw out a conspiracy theory that I think because the camera was on him, Eddie told the referee to stop it to preserve the Joshua fight. Just a conspiracy theory I wanted to throw out. I don't actually believe that. Go on.
Yeah, it might be true. I have my suspicions about Edward, as you very well know. But yeah, as I'll get onto it, the whole in-between is what I contest, because I've watched it twice. The first time, you're always in awe of the underdog. You're always in awe of the guy who's not expected to do much and doing things and making the favourite look hesitant. But the second time I watched it, it was a lot. The opening rounds, especially the rounds that Belly was winning, according to most people, there were rounds where not a lot was happening, and it was a lot of speculative pass shotting from Belly. He has this, he's basic, but he's also more versatile than other Brits in the way that he can fight on the front and back foot somewhat effectively and score points with that kind of looping right hand that he was catching Usyk off guard with. I don't think Usyk was shook at any point. I don't think he was really frustrated or puzzled. There was funny memes that are going around of where Belly just tried to showboat and goad him, trying to frustrate him. But by the time that happened, Usyk was nearly getting into full with him, and he was turning up the dial. And Belly, quite similar to Alexander Povetkin when he fought Joshua, he was fighting at a pace and an intensity that he was never going to sustain at his age and against a guy far more skilled than he is. And it really told. And you see him getting physically more and more drained. And then that right hand drops and he goes swinging and gets caught and gets finished ultimately. It's just the way it all panned out was, and the way that the whole like build up and everything, how everything led in, is kind of like a bit cringeworthy to me. Just the way that Belly has risen into this sort of idyllic figure towards the British public, when 2 years back, even less than a year back, before the fight, it was pretty much the opposite. It just shows how narratives can be painted and how luck, or in this case, a torn Achilles tendon, can work in a guy's favour.
Mm-hmm.
When for three quarters of his career, he's done good, he's done well, he's done things that are respectable for the level and skill level that he possesses. And then in this quarter of his career, he's had a lot of circus and freak show fights, and then ultimately rolled the dice against the best fighter in his division and been fatally stopped, but still comes out with his credit. And you have loads of people saying, loads of celebrities, loads of low-level celebrities who always hung around these matches on Sky Show saying, oh, what a great career Tony Belly used to have, but they probably wouldn't be able to name five opponents he's faced over the course of his career.
Well,
so those
David
kind of
Hay
things
and
were...
Nathan Cleverley is four already.
Ooh, sick. That's three. So they couldn't name two others.
I mean, just remember what you've said right now, because I'm going to get back to you on this.
Yeah, I know what you're going to lead into. And I'm coming prepared, and I have my reasons for what I've said in the past about Tony Belly's career.
Okay.
We'll get on to that.
But ultimately,
the finish was what it was. Belly comes away with a lot of credit, deserved or undeserved. And there's a lot of things to delve into for the future-wise. And Belly rising to the sunset, having made a lot of money and having, quote-unquote, dared to be great. And won the story of the fight, as you like to say.
Well, I don't like to say that. I was just providing like a point of view, because I knew that
you
were going to come like this.
You're a Max Kellerman fanboy.
And I knew that Tom, and Tom hasn't even spoken yet, but if you've listened to Tom in the past, you know what he's about to say. So I had to give the other side. So Tom, take it away.
Sure. So I'm going to be blunt. I think Usyk...
Good.
Carried Belly into the middle rounds. I don't think that's that controversial of an opinion.
Babs disagrees.
Well, Babs is wrong if he disagrees. I disagree. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to give the listeners a peek behind the curtain. This is the second time we're recording this, so no, I'm doing my best. But but anyway,
you're talking about me.
So trying to make this sound fresh. Anyway, look, if I don't believe that boxing is fixed in a broad way. I know that's the reputation it sometimes has. Definitely when I got into the sport, a lot of my friends said, oh, why do you care about boxing? It's just fixed. And I don't think fighting is fixed, but I think sometimes fighters will behave in certain ways that benefit them. And look, this was the Tony Bellew show coming in all through the promotion. This was the Tony Bellew show all through the night. They really produced this as, you know, I said this is like – it was like a Rocky movie and Bellew was Rocky, you know, and they Usyk treated it that way. If he had gone in and really put the foot on the gas pedal, that wouldn't have benefited him. He has this deal, as you guys discussed, has this deal with Matchroom, multi-fight deal. He's planning to spend this next phase of his career in England. It's not really to his benefit to come out and blow Bellew out. Made a lot more sense for him to – again, I don't think he
didn't stop
through the rounds, but just – took his foot off the gas pedal, really didn't drive for an early victory, let Bellew get a little tired out, and then in the middle rounds really stepped it up. And by the final round, we saw the clear separation in their talents. Landed about 10 or 15 hard looping left hands. Bellew did absolutely nothing to adjust. And, you know, again, it's the difference in talent was laid bare. And eventually he set up that final 1-2, which sent Bellew down in meme-like fashion right in the lap of Eddie Hearn. He couldn't ask for a better finish. And what I'm really interested in talking about is not Bellew's legacy, because I don't care. He's a UK bum who got blown out by Adonis Stevenson. I care about what the possible future is of Usyk at heavyweight, and if he can really be the next Evander Holyfield, meaning the next cruiserweight to make a big impact in the heavyweight division.
Well, let me stop you right there, because if you ask Babs, he'll say, no. It's not if he could become the next Evander Holyfield. It's about if he could become the next David Haye. Now, before we get on to Usyk,
the next Tony Bellew and make waves at heavyweight with those devastating victories over a disabled David Haye. But anyway,
well,
go on.
I agree with your take. So I'm not going to go there. I said what I said at the beginning because I wanted to provide a sort of alternative point of view on how the fight could have played out. And to an extent, you know, what I said is probably there are some acorns of truth there. However, is not how I feel. I'm with you, Tom. I think Usyk waited for his moment and then took the fight over. But I want to, before we get to Usyk, and he deserves all of the credit. Absolutely, he deserves all of the credit. He fought a terrific fight, and he's the one with an actual future in boxing. But I want to address something in regards to Tony Bellew's legacy. Babs over here on Twitter was saying that Tony Bellew will go down as one of the best British fighters of this generation. And he's absolutely wrong for a lot of reasons. A lot of reasons. One of which Tom's already spelled out. He got beat up by Tony Bellew. Or not by Tony, probably by himself too, but by Adonis Stevenson. But look, in the grand scheme of things, Tony Bellew, if we just really look at his career, honestly, bluntly, he's had some big events that have ultimately meant nothing. He has zero in-ring accomplishments. His accomplishments in the ring don't even stack up to Kell Brook's. And Kell Brook has one of the weakest resumes that you could think of. I mean, James DeGale has a better resume than Tony Bellew. Tony Bellew's gotten himself into some high-profile fights. There's no doubt about it. And he's actually managed to snag a world title. But look at the opposition. Has he beat anybody in the top five? Absolutely not. He has not. Does he have any top 10 wins? Maybe one? Nathan Cleverley doesn't count. Nathan Cleverley wasn't good, isn't good, will never be good. And so you're going to sit here and talk about Tony Bellew as the best fighter of this of his generation or whatever is a complete insult to Carl Froch.
Look, Babs is bursting at the seams to jump in here.
He can jump in, but he's just digging himself into a deeper grave. Go ahead.
I'm not going to dig myself a deeper grave. Who do you think I am?
I think you're the guy who's defending and rounding up the Matchroom FC troops on Twitter with this Tony Bellew nonsense.
Well, they're the type of people who rate his wins over David Haye when I don't. I rate.
Oh, you rate his wins over who? Masternak?
Masternak's a decent win. Chilemba's a decent win.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Split
decision wins. Okay.
Yeah, and you have to take.
Isn't the Chilemba draw, by the way?
First fight was a draw, then rematch, and he won. So I take this in the context of how British fighters are perceived and the kind of level of British fighters that have been operating at within the past decade. And like you guys have referred to, Bellew, like many, are just perceived as bums who step up and get beat. And for the most part, even the highest achieving British guys of the era, Carl Froch, Carl Frampton, maybe with the exception of the heavyweights who are yet to fight the elite prime guys of the era yet, as of today, most guys have a few high-level wins, but at the very top, they are beaten, and for the most part, they're all beaten convincingly. So my approach was, look, at Bellew, he's done the domestic scene, British Commonwealth, European champion, and became world champion in the fight against a top 10 opponent in a fight he was an underdog in. And for that alone, I feel like he's still in that bracket of achieving guys who still get conclusively beaten at the top level. But at least with his skill level and the lack of natural ability that he himself even admit that he has, he's able to reach that level compared to guys who are probably more talented than he was and never reached that level. So I can, on a genuine level, respect that, and I can see a reason for him to be included in that bracket of the better British fighters of the era, alongside the likes of George Groves and even De Gale, who feel... You're really going to sit here and stand for De Gale to be honest with me. Even me, a big De Gale
At least James De Gale's gone to someone else's country and won a vacant title. He's done that.
Against Andre Durell, faded Andre Durell.
He's done that.
Come on.
I agree with you that is a pretty underwhelming accomplishment. But what has Tony Bellew done?
He'd be a top 10 opponent like James De Gale did. And he was an underdog. James De Gale was a favorite going into that Durell fight. And he was meant to wipe the floor.
Honestly, just sit here and praise the win over David Haye. He beat a former cruiserweight champion, former heavyweight titleist.
I'm not going to do that, because that last quarter of Tony Bellew's career was ultimately a farce, but a necessary farce, because he needs to make a lot of money. But
like, what has he done? You're basing this off of a win over Elunga Makabu, which he was nearly stopped in the fight.
Came back, knocked him out.
Andrew Selby's probably done more than Tony Bellew at this point.
No, he hasn't.
I mean,
he hasn't even won the European title his weight yet.
Okay, I forgot. You guys are getting
into the weeds here.
Hold on, Tom. I'm going to summarize this. I get it. As a domestic British fighter, I'll give you your argument. But if you're going to sit here and say that as a world-level fighter, which Tony Bellew's never had a world-level win, then fine. He can be one of the best domestic British fighters of all time, alongside George Groves, alongside Sam Eggington, alongside Huey Fury.
Here we go. Okay.
But he has zero wins on the world level. I'm not going to sit here. You don't get to put best in front of Tony Bellew's name unless we're talking about best on the mic. I'll give you that. Ricky Barnes has done more.
Yeah, he has actually. But I say, okay, I shouldn't have said best, but I say he's one of the better ones. Relative to his skill level to the guys he was in the achievement with. Best maybe
that's the cops coming for this bad take.
Yeah, best may have been excessive. I'm trying to atone for my sins right now before I get arrested. But no, best may have been excessive. I can't believe you're making me back down from the argument that I'm trying to make. But yeah, one of the best ones for the reasons that I laid out.
But look, you've reframed it. And the way you've reframed it, I think, is accurate. But just don't disrespect Carl Froch. You know, at least Carl Froch has rematched guys that have beat him and then beat them.
wouldn't even rematch Andre Ward. He got played with a guy who
Understood that. He's like, Andre Ward beat me fair and square. I'm not winning that rematch.
No, he still makes excuses to this day about that fight.
Yeah, but yeah, he can't mess his nose up.
Gracious about that.
Let's move on. Oleksandr Usyk, what is his ceiling at heavyweight?
Very highly.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
What?
No, I'm just curious to hear it. Babs, how would what would a Dillian White Oleksandr Usyk fight look like? That's what I want to know.
I think you know the answer to my question.
Is already banging the drum. Matchroom is banging the drum for that fight.
Yeah, it just seems to be the formula that every like foreign higher weight guy now gets thrown into a Dillian White conversation, or Dillian White has some sort of opinion on the guys without really fighting them. We saw this when Povetkin knocked out Price, and then ringside, there's Dillian White in his primary school jacket saying, "Let's go, I'll fight you in July," and stuff like that. So there always seems to be some Dillian White link. But to touch on that, obviously, there's the opinion that I have on Usyk's potential hit rate, and then my opinion on where he's going to go in the future. I think obviously his future is going to be at those higher weight classes, but it gets a bit interesting because he's obviously headlined the British UK pay-per-view here against a notable opponent. Don't expect him to go straight into a Joshua fight, and they'd want to have a fight to test the waters there. But the interesting thing about that is that it may have to be overseas, it may have to be in other territories, because the way that it works in the UK is that there's probably not the money to pay him what he'd merit or what he'd need, he'd want for a fight against a heavyweight contender on a UK on the card or on a regular show with which the fights are sparse. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes next. There's always the expectation that, like every Joshua opponent, they try to build up that they'll just chuck him in with David Price again and let him get another knockout.
Oh, against God. That is the most likely thing, right?
Because Price will come cheap. He's always willing to fight anyone on Eddie Hearn on the card. So I don't know, because other than that, is he going to fight the loser of White Chisora? Because the winner's basically nailed in to fight Joshua in April. So I don't get what you're doing in this room. But if he was to go overseas and be like the forefront of those DAZN cards, and by God, do they need stars or guys who can actually fight?
Yeah.
Then it becomes more interesting. You can maybe feed him out to more competent contenders or guys he can look good against, and then build up a Joshua fight that way.
I'm a little confused here that we keep like Usyk's a star. What? I mean, Tom, you can go jump in, but that's my question that I've got. So
okay,
far.
I didn't mean to say star. I mean to say guy who can actually fight and has skills within that matchroom stable, domestically and USA wise. Just to round up, my take on him in heavyweight is that I think he gives the top guys even interesting fights. I'd be intrigued to see him in with any of them, whether it's a skill level. If I was to say what his best chance would be at winning the title. Closure is Angelo, but I feel like it may be against Anthony Joshua, just looking at the various styles and skill sets. And I see a lot of people who are probably writing him up on the basis that he quote-unquote lost rounds to Tony Bellew and was getting outboxed by Tony Bellew. And even if you look at the heavyweight division, I'd wonder if people would question the kind of skill sets those people hold. Because I don't think there's many of them other than two who could box on the bout foot and pop shot Oleksandr Usyk like Tony Bellew did. And that's saying an awful lot. So that's where I stand. I feel like he'd be a valuable addition. I feel like he's live against even those top guys.
Go ahead, Tom.
Sure. One quick question first, Babs, if you can just... I'm curious. Do you think Usyk could draw money in the UK at this point? Like, my premise was that he sort of let Bellew off easy, let his fans have something to, you know, go home with that he was competitive for the first half of the fight. Well, again, for the first half of the fight, they gave him something that they could hang their hat on. Do you think he has built up a certain amount of popularity in the UK after this fight? I mean, I know you're now a resident of the US, but what is you what is your take on that? Do you think he can draw something in the UK now, or is he just sort of a foreign challenger who no one cares about?
I think he's more of a foreign challenger than a legitimate draw. Like, they could, like, Brits will appreciate anything, but in essence, they're only really going to come out in force for one of their own. So in order to make events profitable around Usyk, he's going to have to be facing guys which are known to the British public, like the Chisoras and Whites of the world, and ultimately Anthony Joshua down the line. So I don't really see him being much of a worthwhile or valuable commodity going if he's not in those kind of noteworthy fights. He's just to fight other guys in the division who aren't known to the British public that much, then it'd be a bit difficult for him to draw the kind of numbers that they drew last night. So that's why the likelihood is that for the time being he'd probably have to base himself in America under the DAZN Matching USA banner before building to that eventual payday against Joshua.
Now, do you think there's a chance, this is to either of you guys, that they'll put Usyk on the Joshua undercard against one of Hearn's lower-level matchroom guys? Because that's the thing, like, as Angelo, you said, and now, Babs, as you answered, I don't think Usyk is really a big enough draw. I mean, look, they could put him on one of the Matchroom USA cards, but that's not going to draw any money in the U.S. I mean, this was a U.K. fight that was watched by, you know, less than 10,000 people on DAZN in the United States. I mean, Usyk is not a draw here. That's not even a hot take to say that.
I know that, but yeah. I don't think and anyone that, would be happy this with is you saying that.
He'll probably sue you. As I was saying, just on your point.
Tom could win the lawsuit against him. He's got more money, deep, better lawyers, etc.
But just to touch on your point on whether he could face Joshua on the card, this is where the difficulty comes, because before last night, I would have imagines that would be like the next logical step, that he, like Povetkin was against Price in April, then he'd appear on the Joshua undercard against a named British level opponent and build himself that way. But by the sound of it, if you talk to her and if you talk to Usyk's team, the money is not really even there to have that sort of fight compared to the money he made by winning the Super Series and the money he made to headline against Tony Bellew. So that'd be a massive drop off to fight as a chief support on a Joshua undercard as well. So it's not really a logical possibility unless he's willing to take a massive pay cut in the short term, which I don't believe any fighter in his position would.
All right, let me jump in. You guys have talked long enough about without mentioning the elephant in the room here. Listen. This is all fine and good about talking about, oh, could Usyk fight Chisora and Dillian White and all these other British guys? No. Do you guys not see what actually happened? Whether you agree with Tom and myself that Tony Bellew, his success was predicated on Usyk essentially allowing that success to happen, whether you agree with that or whether you are on the other side and you think Tony Bellew actually had success, the takeaway here is that Usyk is a little vulnerable. And you saw in the Bredis fight, and you saw last night that Bredis looked pedestrian. He got away with the win that he shouldn't have gotten. Usyk looks a little vulnerable. Now, tell me something. Do you know promoters to be stupid and put a fighter in a fight where he could be tested, he could lose, and ultimately not have the big money fight? This is just like something you don't do. I don't see them taking the time to put Usyk in. If he's going to take a fight before Anthony Joshua, I don't see them giving him anybody that will give him any sort of trouble. Because you don't want to diminish what you have with the Bellew fight, or sorry, not the Bellew fight, but the Joshua fight at this moment. So, you know, I think Dillian White, his skill compared to Alexander Usyk is a huge gap. It's similar to the gap between Usyk and Tony Bellew in terms of skill. However, anything can happen at heavyweight. And Usyk won't be the biggest guy at heavyweight. He's going to, I don't see him weighing a ton. I mean, he looks like a big guy already weighing in at 200 pounds. I mean, what is he going to max out at, 212 pounds? That's probably his max. And so I don't see that.
I disagree there.
Yeah, I actually think he's a lot bigger also, but go
he's
on.
He's a lot bigger. He cuts a lot of weight.
I don't agree with that. He's standing next to Tony Bellew, I'm not going to be convinced otherwise. Tony Bellew's a guy whose fitness has never been any sort of aspect or focus when discussing Tony Bellew. But the point stands. I don't think we see him in with any of these guys. You just don't risk that Joshua fight. If that Joshua fight's going to be big, like, now's the time to do it. And especially in the wake of Joshua looking vulnerable against Povetkin, I think now's the time you strike. And I wouldn't even throw Dillian White in with, should he beat Derek Chisora? There's no guarantee on that, judging by how pathetic he looked in their first fight. I don't think that it's necessarily a guarantee that they'll give White to Joshua in the spring. And the thing that we should be talking about is, why on earth should anybody be interested in Joshua fighting Usyk? And no diss to Usyk, who is, in my opinion, one of the more skilled fighters in all of boxing. Why should people be interested in that when there is the winner of Wilder versus Fury, who will have been determined in a little under a month now? Why should we want to see this Usyk fight when he could fight a legitimate top two heavyweight in the world?
Because you know he has no interest in fighting a legitimate top two heavyweight in the world at this stage. So as a fan, you have to hedge your bets and take what you can get.
I mean, I understand what the jaded, giving up hope boxing fan like you feels. But for Tom, who's a bit more optimistic... you know, what is your response to that?
Would Usyk chase after the Wilder Fury winner?
No. Why?
Why is Joshua not chasing after the Wilder Fury
Not even
winner?
Why isn't Joshua doing that, but why is he getting let off the hook?
Because everyone thinks that Wilder's the one ducking him and not vice versa. Good PR.
Well, in the UK anyway, but yeah. That's really a matter of opinion how that balance goes. But no, I think, I don't know. I mean, there are so many other things to talk about. Are we really bringing up Joshua and Wilder Fury in the middle of this conversation? But
well,
yeah,
in the mix now.
Well, yeah. So I'm going to answer your question directly, and then I'm going to take it in a slightly different direction. As far as Joshua, I mean, realistically, it doesn't make – I mean, the fight dates don't really match up. I mean, Joshua presumably is going to announce his next opponent pretty soon. Wilder Fury would be possible if Joshua really wanted it. But, you know, sort of realistically, it seems like they're going to have to get an opponent picked sooner than that. Look, it just seems like it's going to be Dillian White after he wins his fight in this fall. So, but as far as I think it is possible that Usyk, look, the point I was trying to establish, then we got way, way off further than I thought, was that Usyk really isn't a draw anywhere. You know, he was a good promotion with Bellew, but Bellew was by far the A side in the promotion. He had value as a B side there, but not an A side. So I see one of two things happening. I mean, it's interesting that Babs, you are so pessimistic on the chances of him being on the Joshua undercard, because that would make sense to me. You know, that's what they did with Povetkin. He was on the undercard. He got his knockout win, although he looked a little troubled, and that set him up for the Joshua fight. In this case, I could definitely see the same thing happening with Usyk. I think they would put him in with a lower level guy, like someone ranked between 20 and 30 at heavyweight, one of Hearn's worst, you know, not great heavyweights, not one of his better heavyweights.
Like David
Price. I think
Price
is actually realistic. Try to get an impressive win for Usyk, say yes, he can handle being, you know, see how heavy he weighs in, and then set up a Joshua fight. I think the other alternative I see, look, this was for the WBC title. Usyk now holds every belt at the weight class, as far as I know, except maybe a regular title somewhere.
Doesn't hold the IBO one.
oh, Jesus Christ. Well, yeah, not a world title to anyone except for Chris Eubank Jr. or Anthony Joshua. But yeah, he is well positioned. Like, holding those belts holds a lot of value. When you move up in weight, you're in a position to negotiate with the sanctioning bodies to try to get a title shot. You know, this is something like Top Rank did unbelievably well with when Crawford moved up, that they made sure that Jose Ramirez ended up with that WBC belt, even though it probably should have gone to Regis Prograis, or at least they should have mandated the two to fight before getting it. Anyway, and then on Crawford's side, he was able to get that fight with Jeff Horn straight away from having the WBO belt. He was able to turn that into a direct title shot. So Wilder Fury is for the WBC title. Could we see... now that White is off doing other business and will probably fight Joshua, Hearn had been dogging Wilder with Joshua. He was sort of his Wilder with White. So yeah, could Usyk go into that role? Could he put Usyk, who can't draw money anywhere, could he put him in the role of Tundra Trace after that WBC title and get that Wilder fight? I think that's extremely likely, although I don't think that that's what Usyk wants. I mean, if you hear what his team says, they just want the Joshua fight. They know that's worth by far more money than any other fight. They don't want to get stuck in a quagmire at heavyweight. They don't want to get stuck in a position where he fights Big Baby Miller and he gets beaten in an ugly fight because of the sheer size advantage. They want a Joshua fight, but I could definitely see him, again, going into this white role going forward.
Oh God, you just made me picture a potential Big Baby Miller Usyk fight.
The WBO title is the easiest one for him to get. And the reason why is because if you hold the title with the WBO, which Usyk does, you automatically become the mandatory if you move up in weight. And Anthony Joshua holds the WBO. Oh, so now he is just going to fight his mandatory again, who happens to be a guy who signed with the streaming platform that Anthony Joshua is with. It's funny. Tom, I think you can see this. Maybe Babs, I don't know. He's a little blinded by his hate for Eddie Hearn. But it's kind of funny how you can see, like, these moves are telegraphed from, like, months in advance.
I see most of the moves are telegraphed. I'm just teasing you. Yeah.
But they're just telegraphed. Like, it just seems like, just magically, Usyk's going to move up to heavyweight at the time when Joshua has to fight his WBO mandatory, and the new WBO mandatory is Usyk, the guy who they wanted to fight all along. Similar to Povetkin and how that played out last September, Joshua's career has been thus far navigated really well by Matchroom.
Like, without fault.
Yeah, like, it's just been great. And, you know, if you and I and Tom... We might, and you listening, also, you might understand, like, okay, this is clearly just, like, maneuvering behind the scenes. Yeah, that's what it is. But, like, it works. He's one of the biggest stars in all of boxing. And then, you know what happens after Joshua knocks out Usyk? You're going to love this, Tom. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. You ready?
Okay.
Jarrell Miller will be the mandatory. WBA. Oh.
And Tom will be in attendance at the Barclays front row to see that super fight.
Super fight.
It's actually a Matchroom card, so it'll be at the Nassau Coliseum.
Oh, excuse me. That's right. The PBC have an exclusive now.
I just thought Matchroom had an exclusive with Nassau. Anything else you guys want to talk about this, or should we move on?
I've really touched most of the positions.
Yeah, I just... Usyk.
Tom, I wanted to get your thoughts on whether Usyk could be competitive at heavyweight, because this is where it all started.
Right, that's exactly the question I wanted to go into. I mean, that's just very quick, hopefully. Just wanted to go through. I mean, at what level does Usyk start to have problems, like, if you go through the rankings? I mean, I think people... You know, fanboy arguments about the heavyweight division sort of forget how quickly it drops off after you get outside of the top 10. I mean, right now...
It's like every division.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, heavyweight, you know, people will say, oh, you know, he's not in the top 20, and it's like, have you seen who's actually fighting? You know, right now, like Marco Huck, for instance, just fought at heavyweight in his last fight, got a knockout win. BoxRec has him at number 14. In the division, for instance, you know, and that's someone who Usyk already knocked out. So I think if you look at the rankings, like, just to go through very quickly, 15 is Charles Martin. I think we would probably pick Usyk to win that by decision. Marco Huck, 14, already knocked him out. Christian Hammer, I think, again, Usyk win. Brian Jennings, 12. I think we say Usyk win. Derek Chisora, number 11. I think we probably say Usyk win. 10, Joseph Parker.
Easily beats Parker.
Easily beats Parker. Interesting. So I would say Parker would have a chance based on the size.
He's done.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, long way back.
Sorry for himself. No, you're done.
Yeah,
I think he deserves. I don't know. I mean, he got a tough play in that last fight where White landed a heavy headbutt. It was ruled a knockdown. Without that, the fight would have been a draw just on the scorecards, and he had to deal with the effects of that. Anyway, that's a whole other fanboy argument on my half. But anyway, we got Adam Konashki. I think we would pick Usyk to win that.
Usyk easily beats that guy.
Yeah, Kubrat Pulev.
Usyk schools him.
Yeah,
Luis Ortiz. That's the first one where I would say
That's a good
Yeah,
fight.
It starts to get in. I think I would pick Ortiz, no question. I mean, he has size and power. Again, it's like, Babs, I agree with you that Usyk is bigger than maybe Angelo says. Like, I think he would probably weigh in natural weight, probably somewhere between 215 and 220. But the
I
size advantage.
214, so like.
214. Okay. Sorry. I was.
I'm thinking more 220 to 230. I think he is pretty big.
So, you know, you're talking Luis Ortiz is a solid 240, so it's a pretty solid
great fight.
Size advantage, and he's really shown heavyweight power in a way that Usyk sometimes has not even shown, you know, at cruiserweight. Again, not going to belly you notwithstanding, who, by the way, again, was blown out by Stevenson as well. Again, that's a whole other topic. Dillian White, again, interesting, because again, White has such a big size advantage. He just had that win over Parker, although, as I said, I view at least being partially controversial. Okay, go up to Tyson
Wiggins.
Fury again. Then you're talking about a freakish size advantage. But,
yeah,
you know,
that's when you get that's the kind of style matchup where Usyk would struggle for me.
Jarrell Miller again. That's over 100 pounds on Fight Night.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any question that Usyk would beat Miller.
Yeah,
this is the thing. I remember, like, we've talked about this for a while. Like, I love the freak show element of Usyk at heavyweight. Like, I would love to see Miller versus Usyk. I mean, that to me is just fantastic. Again, and then you get up to Povetkin, Wilder, Joshua. So just to make my point, how competitive will be at heavyweight? I think you without much thought and much controversy, I think Usyk is somewhere between 5 and 10 at heavyweight. And then it becomes an interesting thing to see where he ends up after that with, you know, the size disadvantage he would be at against these bigger guys. But I would say, you know, I don't have a hard time saying this. I said this when he beat Glowacki, and I at the time was already thinking about him moving up to heavyweight eventually. He's pound for pound better than anyone in the division, but he would have a significant size disadvantage against the top guys, and notably a power disadvantage, where I think his power, you know, again, he just got this big knockout over Bellew, but we've seen it in enough of his cruiserweight fights. I don't think he would have enough power to get the respect of those top guys. You know, again, size and strength advantage is one thing. Power is another thing. So, yeah, I'm interested. I'm pretty excited, but I hope that he doesn't end up on a weird path thanks to the Eddie Hearn situation, you know, because, you know, as Babb sort of hinted at, that sort of the worst version of his career is if he ends up headlining Matchroom USA cards against the type of fighters that Luis Ortiz has been fighting on those cards.
If I could zoom out on that, the worst way his career would play out would be similar to the guys who spent their careers chasing around a fight with Mayweather and Pacquiao and either didn't get it or got it too late.
Did I say Luis Ortiz? I meant Big Baby Miller with his, you know, last fight against. But anyway, sorry, go on.
But you can say Ortiz took you know, he had a cup of coffee with Matchroom and that didn't lead to anything. But that would be the worst case scenario of Usyk's career, which would be basically following or just getting dicked around by Matchroom, not getting that fight with Joshua, and, you know,
it ties into the point you're making about him not being a draw. There is a likelihood that he could get lost in the balance, because if he's not being built into this kind of like profitable, marketable commodity in the relevant markets that he's fighting in, then he could be lost in transition during this kind of like, I wouldn't say network promotional cold war, but you'll see like all this semblances of a cold war emerging again, and Usyk could be one of the victims of that.
I'm optimistic that they'll make that fight. I don't think that they make that deal to go over to Dazen if there's no deal in mind. Let's move on, though, because there are other great fights we need to talk about. Anthony Carolla won his fight against Dowd Jordan, which
air
was
quotes great,
which is cool.
Angelo's already so excited for it. I can see it right now.
And
next year,
places
Lomachenko
him
versus
as a,
Carla.
Yep, a mandatory for Lomachenko. Look, this is a shame. It's a real shame that Lomachenko at this point, and if Lomachenko just says, I'm not fighting this fight, I would applaud that. I would say, good for you, because this is a waste of his time. Anthony Carolla has no chance against Lomachenko. He looked awful against Jordan. You know, if you took away the names, you took away the commentary, and you just showed that fight to a random person who doesn't know either guy, but knows enough about how to score a fight, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have said Anthony Carolla won that fight. They'd say, I don't know. There was a lot of nothing happening in that fight. So he got the fight, obviously, and he's going to fight Lomachenko. He's going to lose. Nothing surprising there. Lomachenko is not going to lose. Actually, one more thing. I plan to transition into the subject. And the transition was that I think Usyk's problem is that he has at heavyweight, or at least that we perceive, just in terms of like punching power and all the, you know, physical attributes that he will be shortcomings for Usyk, maybe at heavyweight. It's no different than imagining any fighter moving up two weight classes. It's very similar. You know, you would say the same stuff about Lomachenko fighting at welterweight or Mikey Garcia fighting at welterweight. It's like, yeah, pound for pound, this guy should be able to contend, compete with these guys, but like, could he withstand the power of Spence? Like, at some point, this stuff has to matter. And I think it's a similar thing with Usyk, similar thing if Lomachenko wanted to move up a couple of weight classes. I don't really have anything else to say on this Carolla fight, though, and I really don't. There's really not much to say that's interesting about the Lomachenko mandatory status, unless one of you ridiculously wants to make the claim that Carolla is a good matchup and could beat Lomachenko. Any of you about to fail a drug test and say yes?
I mean, look, this is a Christmas gift for Lomachenko. He couldn't ask for a more inviting fight than this. It's a guaranteed win. It will bring him a certain amount of cachet.
Well, that
I think it's
be, Beltran.
Well, it's only interesting in the sense that, you know, Hearn has said his master takeover plan for the DAZN Matchroom USA partnership is to win purse bits. So far, he has not been successful at that, but I think that's the one exact, like, one thing that would be interesting about that fight would be if, he would try to use that as a way to outbid Top Rank. That would be interesting to see if they pull out a lot of money to try to get that fight on DAZN. Otherwise,
Bob Arum
again,
losing a purse bid? Come on.
Well, we've seen interesting
things.
Did lose
the Vosdick one, but against Eddie Hearn? Come on.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and then won the Eddie Hearn one by a suspiciously thin margin, strongly indicating that the WBO helped him out with that, tipped him off as to what the other bid was. Although that's none of my business. I don't know. But
it's my business, I know. They just told him, you need about 70,000 more to make a bid.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is that the DAZN broadcast of the Carolla fight, I tuned in. I was really only planning to watch the main event, but I turned in the Carolla fight. They screwed it up. It was literally playing in slow motion.
What?
I'm not kidding. I think what they did was they had the 25 FPS UK broadcast playing at 30 FPS. And then they had, yeah, I know I get into the weeds, but I love this technical stuff. And then they had just they had no sound effects playing. So there was no audio from the arena at all. They just had the international broadcast Brian Kenny was doing.
I didn't even have Brian Kenny on mine.
No, it was Dave Bontempo and Brian Campbell.
Brian Campbell, sorry. Yeah, I was, okay, Brian Campbell, excuse me, not Brian Kenny. To avoid pitch scaling from the distortion. They had it fixed by the main event, but I couldn't believe they literally had it playing at 20% slow motion.
I don't think I had that on mine.
I'm positive that I had it. I'm not saying
you didn't have it, but I also don't watch with the sound on, so I may not have noticed.
I was astounded. But again, yeah, they didn't have any of the background.
I didn't notice any difference. I thought the fight was just bad.
But the the main event, they had it fixed. The main event actually came through great. So That's all I have to say about that, which is more time than we owed Anthony Crolla.
Okay. He's the nicest guy in boxing, but not the best fighter. The World Boxing Super Series happened. Marius Bradis beat Noel McCalin. It was a pretty messy fight. It just wasn't very good. There wasn't a lot of sustained action, a lot of fouling, a lot of holding, a lot of headbutting, a lot of really hard to score rounds. But Bradis only won maybe two rounds clearly, and the rest were either clear McCalin rounds or swing rounds, and ultimately, naturally, Bradis got the decision, which he probably didn't deserve. He's blaming injury. The thing that I wrote down, but we're just not going to discuss because I don't think it's very interesting, because most people probably didn't watch that fight. But basically, there's two ways to look at this. One, Usyk ruined Bradis, and Bradis is never going to be as good again. Or two, but if you say that, you give Usyk all the credit. Now, if you say the other thing, which is to say, and this will make Usyk look bad, is just that Bradis sucks, then Usyk doesn't get the credit for beating him. And you could look at it either way. I don't have a preference. I think Bradis is okay. But basically, Bradis wasn't good. Bradis did also claim injury. He also got rid of all of his staff from after the Usyk fight, which is probably him blaming people because he lost the fight. And that's usually not a good thing in boxing. But Babs, you have something you want to add?
So you mentioned like two possible theories. One, Bradis not being very good, or two, him. What was the second theory again?
You're not listening to what I'm saying?
No, but it just slipped my mind. I literally had it on the tip of my tongue again.
No,
it
the other thing Bradis. Was that Usyk ruined him.
The third one is that he just fights the level of his opposition.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's
that's literally exactly what I was going to say very succinctly. We've seen that before. He fights to the level of his competition. He'll fight, look bad, and fight down to worse guys. But he's shown that he can fight at the highest level in the division, which is, you know, I think why I said this tournament was not that great, because he's an unappealing A side for that reason. You know, in with Usyk, he showed he could hang. But at the same time, he's not a guy who's going to blow out worse competition. And again, give him a certain benefit of the doubt that he was injured here. Anyway, sorry to jump in.
This, no worries. This, given this fight more than enough time. Glowacki beat Maxim Vlasov. Vlasov has just like never been good. So I'm not even going to mention that. The takeaway is that this cruiserweight iteration of the tournament just isn't good. There's really no other way to say it, but you just can't get the, when you have guys that are at this level fighting each other, the fights usually aren't that good. And that's what we're seeing. And especially when you're running two other tournaments parallel, in addition to this massive influx of boxing that we have, it's just slipping under the radar, but not for any reason other than it deserves it. This isn't worthy of really discussing. Similar to like the ESPN2 cards that ESPN or Golden Boy had, the contract that Golden Boy had with ESPN, where that's over now, but they never got any fanfare because it's like, wait, we have cards on ESPN already, and we have enough that these ESPN2 cards, we don't really have to pay attention for them. We're just transitioning into that ESPN2 card. The fight was ridiculous. Okay, just ridiculous.
Oh, I mean, my God, I made sure to watch this. It was hilarious garbage.
Okay, well,
what was it? What was it? 2,000 punches between them or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
I just love from the first minute, I'm jumping in, excuse me, but I just love the entire first round took place in one corner. Like, literally, he just ran over. Got Soto Karas against the ropes and just started throwing punches, just the worst form punches imaginable, and they never left that corner. And then the second round was similar, and then they moved a bit more later on, and eventually Karas took over, but started to more clearly win rounds because he was using angles a little bit to land punches, because prior to that, they'd just been 100% squared up. But
imagine losing a war to Karras in 2018. Just saying. Archer Beterbiev is going to delay his defense against Joe Smith Jr. They say it's too soon, that they'll fight in February rather than in December, which was supposed to be on Dazen or maybe even the Canelo Fielding undercard. Do you think that they're starting to realize that Beterbiev isn't that good?
They should have realized that a long time ago.
I thought that you would be one of those people that's like super high on Beterbiev.
Why? Because I love crude,
because of what you said about Tony Bellew earlier.
Because I like crude, unskilled brawlers.
Yes, that maybe. Tom, what's your take on this?
I actually didn't know the news. What did you say? It got delayed. What was supposed to happen? I thought they were fighting on the Canelo undercard.
So So Hearn wanted to make that fight for the Canelo undercard. That was one of his slots he had. But Beterbiev's team was like, no, we need to delay it until like the new year. So it'll probably happen in like February time.
I mean, there could also be reasons like he wanted to headline. Like sometimes these deals are a little bit like he could be guaranteed more money as a headliner as part of the DAZN deal, like under the co-promote. Like there could be multiple reasons for that. I don't know what direction are you taking this though, well, as far as what does that mean or what?
Well, here's the thing. Okay, Bab said what he said, but he's reporting. Babs is reporting Eddie's spin of the events, because what really happened is that Beterbiev pulled out of the fight. That's what ESPN reported.
This came from, what was it? No, not Hearn, but what was it? Yvonne Michelle, because obviously it's a co-promotional deal.
ESPN reported that Beterbiev had pulled out of the fight. And
What do they know? They have Steve Kim and Dan Raphael.
Do you have something to say about them?
Obab's kicking a hornet's nest.
But I'd...
Amazing that people who pull out of a fight will cite some reason. That's totally justified, right?
Some are, some aren't.
Okay, well...
Not that I had a great amount of interest in that fight either way.
They mentioned that Joe Smith Jr. is a very good fighter and they needed more time if they were going to fight a guy as good as Joe Smith Jr.
Okay, now it's starting to become a cliche.
See?
they didn't want to suffer the same fate as Bernard Hopkins. They're shook.
Well, I think that they're starting to realize that Beterbiev, like, he's just really vulnerable. I'm not going to say he sucks or anything like that, but he's really vulnerable. And if you put him in with a guy like Joe Smith Jr., who's been known to have some punch, Beterbiev can easily get himself knocked out. He damn near got himself knocked out against Callum Johnson.
Like, yeah, I think you'd have to say the fight is at least a risk. I mean, when the fight was announced, I think my take was like, it's a risk for both guys, but it's going to come out in Beterbiev's favor, and I think he would definitely be the favorite, but you'd have to say there's at least a risk to that. He's so defensively flawed.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Tom, perk up a little bit, okay? I got something good for you. There's a report, a belief, that the Wilder versus Fury ticket sales are not going well. Do you believe there's any trouble with the slow ticket sales?
Not at all. Wow. I think if your source is Eddie Hearn.
Yes, I was hoping you'd bring that up.
Yeah, if the source is Eddie Hearn, I think you have to take it with not a grain of salt, but with a truck full of salt. I think this was never going to be a mega blockbuster. I mean, it's a little strange. It's in L.A. I think hopefully just for optics, it will sell out the Staples Center. I think in terms of live gate, they'll do a pretty good job just because they'll be able to sell those ringside seats for a lot of money. I mean, this is still, you know, a huge global attraction, talking about a heavyweight fight between two undefeated guys, the lineal title at stake. It is a really big fight. So I think the gate will be pretty good. I definitely would not trust anything Eddie Hearn has to say about this. And I think it'll be interesting to see. I'm not guaranteed it's going to be a sellout. I'm not guaranteed it's going to be, you know, the top. It's going to break into the top three gate for the year. But I think it won't be that bad. I think it won't be that bad.
Well, I do not believe that there's any trouble whatsoever.
Really?
And that is because, you don't know what you're talking about here. You don't know that there are two periods that are important when it comes to ticket sales.
This is what I struggle to understand, because I know like, we've had this conversation before on here and off here about how quality of ticket sales is better over quantity. And obviously, the European and UK markets focus on quantity in terms of, like, how many we can sell on the day, compared to the US market, where it's more about quality, what type of seats are going and how quickly are they going and how much gate and revenue you're drawing. But in terms of when the most important time for ticket sales are, that's why I don't understand. Is it at the beginning? Is it towards the end? Are there a lot of, like, late comers who can't come on the week?
Well, it's both.
Especially in LA, which doesn't have often these kind of big or perceived big fights, if you say. So.
No, well, because we got a lot going on here. There's, like, a lot of sporting events all the time in LA. There's a lot of things that you can do with your time. But the most important aspects, the most important time periods when selling tickets is the first week and the last week. If you think about it, like, in terms of doing a class project, you know, you got people who will do it right away. And then you got the people who do it at 3 a.m. before it's due in a couple of hours. Like, there's no middle ground here. And the ticket sales are pretty similar. And you combine that just with people's natural, like, either do things now or do things much, much later, as late as you can. Combine that with something else that nobody's talking about. And that is that in Hispanic areas, and that's what LA is, it's a Hispanic area, you do big numbers and walk-up sales. And so the fight should do well enough. 8,000 tickets rumored to have been sold. So if Eddie Hearn's reporting that, you know it's a little higher than that. I've actually looked. The floor is sold out, with the exception of the corners, which are always the last to sell because those aren't good seats. If you've ever been ringside to a fight, you know the corners suck. The floor is all sold out. There are no tickets under $200 that are available. So those, what is actually available is the mid-range tickets that are pretty expensive. They're a little too expensive for the view, but not cheap or not expensive enough for the floor. So that's what's less. Those prices will probably drop and will be sold. But the walk-up sales are a big thing. And I'll tell you a story about this, okay? So Bruce Pritchard has a podcast. Tom, you listen to this?
I knew this was. Yeah, I was wondering if you're going for the Eddie Guerrero story. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, well, basically Eddie Guerrero, big Mexican American star. He's put in a main event position, and then so they do a show in his hometown, and ticket sales are pathetic. And the company, who doesn't typically do shows, you know, in areas like this, is freaking out. Because the ticket sales are looking horrible, and it starts casting doubts on whether Eddie could sell, should he be the top guy, blah, blah, blah. And one of the guys, Bruce, he's like, don't worry. Like, the tickets will sell. And they're like, no, it's the week of the event. Like, no tickets are selling. What are we going to do? He's like, don't worry. The day of the event, the line is like goes like for a mile with everyone showing up at the gate trying to buy tickets to get into the show. It wound up having a huge gate, big success, et cetera, et cetera. He goes on to be a star, and it's the same thing here. There's going to be a big walk-up sale, as there usually is, and at the end of the day, it will be a success. Now, here's the thing. How will you define that success? Because I don't think it's going to sell out. And I would have told you that months ago. I'll tell you that today, and I'll tell you that on the day of the fight. If it's a sellout, I would be shocked. We don't sell things out here. The Dodgers didn't even sell out for the World Series. Like, LA people are lazy. Do you understand the traffic we have to deal with to get to these events? I live probably 11 miles away from the Staples Center. It will take like 45 minutes if there's traffic to get there. So it's a big hassle to go. It's much easier to just watch on TV. I have no issues at all with thinking that this is in trouble, and especially when you consider the source is Eddie Hearn. No, like, who cares? How is he some sort of authority on a fight that he's not even promoting?
Because he's the savior of boxing. He's come to take over America. As illustrated with his amazing mega card in Kansas this weekend.
I was going to say, this is poised to do more revenue than every single one of Hearn's Matchroom USA cards combined, probably about triple.
That's just really mean. That's really mean.
8,000 is like nearly more than actual tickets sold to any of Hearn's USA events combined.
Quick question on this card, by the way, before you move on. So this is a question for Babs, actually. Joe Joyce, 6-0, mm-hmm. six knockouts, 33-year-old UK prospect. He has been kind of fast-tracked since he moved over to the US side, fighting on some PBC prospect cards. He's fighting on the undercard on the televised portion. What is your take on him, and what's your take on his draw in the UK at this point? Are people psyched about him? I mean, again, he's 33. I know he had some amateur background, but what's the word on Joe Joyce?
So to take it back, Joe Joyce is a guy who's a late start into the sport. I think he was in his early to mid 20s when he got into it. Obviously, Olympic silver medalist in 2016, and then. In terms of drawing power, it's basically non-existent. So when he turned over, he signed with David Haye and his promotional team. And they basically put him, they had about a few fights. A lot of them were in near like nightclub type of venues. I remember his debut was in some sort of, next to the O2, there's a small venue called Indigo O2, which is not suitable for boxing. And when you're sitting ringside, you can barely see most of the corners of the ring. So these are the kind of like small venues, and obviously York Hall and places like that. This is where he was mostly fighting. And then obviously on undercard of Bellew Hay as well, when he won the Commonwealth belt. So he's had next to no drawing power. And I think today he even announced that he'd basically severed all ties with David Hay and is now basing himself in the US with Schaefer. And he also has his manager, who's quite vocal as well. In terms of his ceiling and ability, I feel, in this current climate of heavyweights and their skill levels, when you have a guy who's a volume puncher, albeit a slow one, a guy who's physically strong, and a guy who doesn't have a lot of wear and tear, he's obviously going to do some damage. And I feel like he'll be, I feel like, I'd say if I was to put a gauge on the ceiling, it'd be lower to mid top 10 of the division as it stands. There'll be guys towards the higher end who are faster, more sharper, and with the ability to counterpunch, who'll be able to catch him cold and give him trouble like he's had in his amateur days. And obviously, if you go back early to, like, I think 2013, the footage is on YouTube. A lot of people have seen it of him. He's facing Alexander Usyk in the World Series of Boxing, one of their first or second series, where he got beaten over five round editions and lost pretty much every minute of every round. So,
very interesting.
So he's going to do some damage and he's going to make some impact. And it won't shock me if he's been title contention within the next year and a half at the very latest. And obviously, because he's 30, just turned 33, they're going to have to move him fast, and they want to move him fast.
Yeah, right. I mean, being on the US side, I mean, it seems like they're setting him up for a wilder fight, ultimately.
Yeah. Because they wanted the Gerald Washington fight, but obviously I think Washington had other ideas. So it's definitely that kind of WBC route that they're going down for the time being. And good luck to them. He doesn't have a lot of time on his hands. He's partnered up with Abel Sanchez, which God knows how long that relationship's going to last.
Wow, yeah. Not a great year for Abel Sanchez. But one last question. The other PBC guy they're trying to move at heavyweight is Efe Ajakpa. Do you see them being potential rivals as prospects? It sounds like from what you're saying, you think Joyce, they're going to fast track, and they would probably aim to get him in with Wilder at some point, more so than, you know, a prospect showdown with Efe Ajakpa. Like, I think Ajakpa might be a little bit of a pace.
Yeah, because Ajakpa, what is he, 26, 20? Yeah, he's around. So they'll be more patient with him. But when it comes to someone like Joyce, his management, his team, and
Ajakpa's only 24, actually. Speaking of bright prospects, he's only 24.
Yeah, according to his according to what he says, not according to his passport.
Does Nigeria have Cuban problems as well? But
yes, we have quote unquote Cuban problems, which we won't delve into. But he's more of a slow burner, I'd expect. Obviously, he has people around him who are trying to mold him into a sort of a certain type of fighter. Ronnie Shields is quite high on him. But with Joey Joyce, the expectation is that he wants to get to a certain position in a short space of time. So I feel they're on different trajectories.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to take advantage of having you on. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Angela. I know that was a bit of a detour.
Yeah. What do you guys make of Al Heyman? Apparently, okay, this is like all spin because obviously we don't have a quote from Heyman. But essentially, the plan is that PBC is going to invade. Notice the language that you see in these reports. Essentially, PBC is going to have PBC-branded shows in the UK. That's essentially what's happening. You may read it as an invasion, a takeover, blah, blah, blah. But they're holding shows in the UK. Do you think that this is smart on their part, Tom?
I think it's a necessity. I mean, I posted this link up on... Someone else might have beat me to it, but I was at least commenting on this on Reddit. I think it's a little bit... Talking about the takeover is a little bit... You know, that sort of roughly equals the level of Hearn's U.S. takeover. I mean, in terms of the magnitude and significance of this fight. I think it's a matter of necessity. I mean, Babs probably has more to say about this than I do or would know more about this than I do, but... Heyman had been close with Hearn, had done a bunch of fights with Hearn fighters. That kind of split off, and then we sort of understood why when Hearn set up his DAZN deal. Then we saw Heyman sort of getting close with Frank Warren, and we saw a partnership with a bunch of their fights, and Warren promoting a bunch of the guys advised by Al Heyman. And then we saw Warren split off to be with ESPN because he was guaranteed broadcast rights on or broadcast dates on ESPN Plus to show all of his UK cards. So now Heyman left without a UK partner. Okay, they're doing their own business over there. I don't know if this is the biggest fight. This is a fight. You know, it was a fight that I think made sense to do. DeGale is very vulnerable. Eubank got outclassed in his last fight by a fighter who just got knocked out. So I think it makes sense for both of the men. I think it is interesting that it's happening this way as basically like an independent fight almost from the UK perspective without a major backer. So I don't know. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about it.
So if I could just add my two cents. I remember there being talk like a year or a couple years ago when the PBC was getting into its flow about a specific like UK kind of takeover, UK branch. And at the time, I didn't make much of it. As both of you know, I was much more of a Heyman skeptic back then as well. So I was thinking like, what's he really going to add? But if it is to be true that he's looking to delve in now, then it'd make a whole lot more sense to me for a number of reasons. The main thing being that obviously the UK market, as we know it, is predominantly dominated by Matchroom. They have the kind of like quote-unquote monopoly over the whole situation. But in the midst of the kind of branching out into other markets, the USA venture, the announcement of the venture into different European territories, the kind of landscape itself has been saturated. I feel like when you look at the kind of cards that have been put on pay-per-view compared to the cards that are put on regular broadcast in the UK, there's a big gap. There hasn't been on Sky and Eddie Hearn and the Matchroom, there hasn't been a world title fight this year that wasn't put on pay-per-view. And those kind of things seem to stand out to the consumer. I think a lot of people are happy just to pay for anything, but slowly but surely that kind of pay-per-view bubble is going to burst.
What about Inoue versus McDonald?
I meant in the UK.
Oh, okay.
The UK cars, obviously he has the DAZN cars, and then he had guys like Scott Quigg and Jamie McDonald who went to foreign territory to get beat. But so as I was saying, there's kind of like a need or kind of like room that's forming for someone like Heyman to delve in with a sort of product which is appealing to Ward's fans. And if he can make it accessible and somehow maybe get people to invest into it, because not a whole lot of people invest into boxing, because ultimately boxing is a sport where any money that you put in, you're not really going to get out. Like I've seen the phrase used that if you want to make 10 million in boxing, you invest 100 and those kind of things. So if you can get people on terrestrial networks to invest in the so-called British boxing booming landscape, then it makes a whole lot of sense, and there'll be room and maneuvering for fighters who aren't necessarily going to be used as fodder to go abroad to make use of the thriving US landscape with all the different streaming deals, but all wants domestic opportunities and wants to be involved in good domestic nights. So there is that opening for that kind of thing, because Matchroom seems to have taken half the ball in terms of their domestic products.
Very interesting.
One fun fact, Joe Joyce has a degree in art.
Yep.
That is a fun fact.
He had a degree in fine arts from the University of Middlesex, I think it is.
Okay, so. Settle down. and the other thing, I think there's, for a lot of people, you don't really quite know what PBC is. What PBC is essentially a label you put on a series of fights. It's not a promotion, and I think PBC could do well for the smaller promoters who aren't Eddie Hearn and who aren't Frank Warren, who basically, like, they've made it. You can have PBC-branded events, and now you get, maybe your stable is pretty weak, but because you go with PBC, they'll let you have one of their fighters and put them in the main event. So,
That's a good point, because there are, especially in the London area and even up north in Manchester, they're good. There are a lot of small promoters who are kind of like thriving and have
Hennessy. Think of Hennessy.
Not Mick Hennessy. He's done.
Cyclone. Although I don't think they would do anything with Cyclone, but there are lots of small British promoters who might have a little something. But these guys could be helped out, and now you have, and that's one of the UK's successes. Their success stories has been that people will actually watch the undercard. So, like, if you toss someone on a Joshua undercard, although this is the biggest example of this, but if you toss a guy on a Joshua undercard, chances are he's going, like, everyone on the undercard who wins will be elevated because they had the attention of Joshua. And now you bring in a fight. It could even be like, you know, a James DeGale versus, you know, whoever, who's an American, but you have that fight and you bring the attention to the undercards. And now these smaller promoters, they get exposure to their young fighters. I think that could work out in the UK, but I'm not too sure what the game plan here is, because the UK, as evidenced by Eddie Hearn, while there is money at the very top, there's not a ton of it. And especially at the mid-level, I don't think there's a ton of money. I've seen the live gates for Joshua.
Barely any money at all, compared to what you guys experienced in the US.
Exactly. But, you know, don't tell UK fans that. They'll disagree with that. Let's see. Let's move on to Badu Jack and Marcus Brown. It appears that these guys will be fighting. The rumor is that they will be on the Manny Pacquiao versus Adrian Broner undercard. Is Marcus Brown going, like, is there potential that he finally has a breakout fight, that this might be 2018 or actually 2019 could be Marcus Brown's year?
Nope.
Oh, that
I think yes.
All right.
Yeah, well, I know.
You guys fight it out.
I knew Tom was going to... He's more high on Marcus Brown than I am.
You know, I think, ironically, I'm just going to say this to frame frame what you're saying here. One of the first things I remember arguing with you about on the old Slack chat was about the build to James DeGale versus Badu Jack. If I remember correctly, you kept saying that James DeGale was going to blow out Jack.
Wait, and
I
was super high on Jack. Babs?
Babs.
Okay. Because I would never be wrong about something like that.
What is your take on the fight, Babs? And then I'll respond.
I just don't think Marcus Brown is up to that level. He blows hot and cold, I think. What was his best win, either against Thomas Williams or against Shawny Monahan? And he just never really has that kind of like it factor. I feel like a guy like Badu Jack, who chips away at you, is pretty consistent, is pretty physically strong, will undoubtedly get the best of him and show him up for not being able to cut it at that kind of higher fringe world level tier of at light heavyweight. He's just never really impressed me in any of his showings or any of the times I've seen him. And obviously, since the old days of the DeGale Jack kind of arguments we used to have, my opinion of Badu Jack has changed, whatnot. He's greatly improved and James DeGale, I always wanted him to have like that kind of breakout kind of performance, and that never happened.
Yeah, I Anyway, regarding my take for the fight, I mean, very interesting. I mean, Badu Jack is a guy who's shown himself to be quite technically talented for the out of the class at 175, great body puncher. But in his last fight against Adonis Stevenson, he was showed a very bad game plan, started way too slow, and got tagged to the body at the end of the fight, which ended up costing him a decision. Like, he was very dominant in the fight compared to Adonis Stevenson when you compare the rounds that they won, but he gave away a lot of the early rounds, really a tactical mistake, and ended up losing a decision. At the same time, Marcus Brown is a guy who's very physically talented, to borrow Max Kellerman phrase. He's, you know, fast, twitchy. He's got great hand speed, great power, but he's a guy himself who's vulnerable. He looked very bad in 2016, where he fought, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name, but a guy who goes by Hot Rod on the Errol Spence Chris Algieri undercard. This was a fight I was at live. He was lucky to escape with a decision in a close fight. In his last fight against Lennon Castillo, he looked not great. Got knocked down, actually. That was another fight I was at. That was at the Nassau Coliseum on the Berto Alexander undercard. But the three fights in between, dominated Vuitton Thomas Williams Jr., not the best win, but, I mean, he looked the way you're supposed to look if you're a good guy against Thomas Williams Jr. Absolutely annihilated Shawnee Monahan, who went on to have a competitive fight with Sullivan Barrera in his last fight just a couple weeks ago. Or last weekend, excuse me, and then blew out Francis Ngannou. So, I mean, Marcus Brown is a guy who has some flaws, is very fast and powerful. He's 28. He's just in his physical prime. I mean, this is a dream fight for him. There, you could not, within his career, you could not ask for a better opportunity than this. Badu Jack got hurt in his last fight. He is probably at the height of his reputation, still recovering from that first round knockout loss of a number of years ago. I think Badu Jack is probably at the top of his reputation level. So Marcus Brown, I think, could win. If he did win, I think he would get a lot of credit for it. He's definitely physically just at the right point in his career, the right age to do that. So very interested to see how this will play out. I mean, I think Badu Jack will reasonably enter the fight as a reasonably heavy favorite. I think you'd have to expect that going in, but I think Brown is a very live underdog, and I think he'll make it a really good fight. I think this is the fight of his career, and I think he'll treat it that way. And one of the reasons why I was so excited for this, after Badu Jack got that draw, instead of getting the titles, you know, this is the same thing we say with, like, Golovkin with the draw against Canelo. It's like, kind of holds up his career. You know, you don't have that clear win. I mean, that's a completely different situation, but I mean, Jack left that fight with no titles, and Stevenson had a mandatory obligation he needed to fulfill against Vodstick. So then Jack is left without a dance partner. So I was worried Jack was just going to sit out and wait for some other form of a title shot. Instead, we get this Marcus Brown fight, which I think, again, very good fight for fans, even if Brown is a little bit under the radar. So yeah, I can't wait. Did you give your take, Angelo?
No. But I'll tell you, you're both wrong.
Okay.
I'm kidding. I think there's a high potential that Marcus Brown comes out and we really see a great performance out of him. Something that neither of you mentioned and neither of you are really doing your homework that well is that Badu Jack is 35 years old.
Well, that's what I meant to imply that by saying Brown would have an age advantage being 28. But yes, I didn't mention Jack's age in saying
that. Well, you got to be like the commentators during the World Boxing Super Series card and say that he has to start using his age because that is a thing. I understand that Badu Jack has the Ripper supplements and he's probably feeling like he's 21 again and he's at his peak physical form. But Marcus Brown has been waiting for this moment for a long time, and he's finally getting his fight at 28 years old. When it comes to who's close to their physical prime, that would be Marcus Brown. When it comes to who could go into a fight and clearly establish that if it's close, that they're the one who's doing more to win the fight, I think that's Marcus Brown. And I'm only saying that because in the two fights that Badu Jack has had where they were close, he walked away with a draw. Jack has a style that doesn't lend itself to thinking, oh, yeah, that guy's clearly winning. Brown can punch. Jack is an okay puncher. I think he gets a little overrated as a puncher. He's an okay puncher. But just Badu Jack hasn't been...
Yeah, tell
that
to James DeGale's teeth and eardrums.
He didn't even have his mouthpiece in. Like, come on. But Jack hasn't been completely dominant in his career, unless you're talking about the George Groves fight. I think...
He wasn't even dominant in that.
Thank you for getting the joke. But Brown could very well win this fight. And the reason why is because Badu Jack might be a little overrated. You know, he drew with Adonis Stevenson, but what version of Adonis Stevenson did we see? An Adonis Stevenson that hadn't fought in a long time, hasn't had a meaningful fight in a very long time. You know, I think this is an interesting fight. It's a good undercard fight, you know? You want fights like this on the undercard. Fights that have potential. I mean, this has potential to be a really good fight. And if Brown wins, you want that Broner Pacquiao audience to see him. Similar to like the Ricky Burns versus Scott Cardle fight. That's a joke. You guys can laugh.
That's a terrible joke.
I know.
But I see what you're trying to do.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, that's it for that fight. That'll be likely the Pacquiao Broner undercard. And if this is on the Pacquiao Broner undercard, plus we get the Gervonta Davis fight, like that's stacking up to be a ridiculous card. Like, you know, I was not really.
You mean the massacre Gervonta Davis versus Abner Morris? That's a mismatch, man.
Gervonta Davis is gonna lose.
No, he's not.
Okay, I couldn't even say that with any conviction. I tried though.
It's a horrible mismatch.
Let's talk about the fights for this week. We got Maurice Hooker versus Alex Saucedo. And Tom, you mentioned
Tom's going to shit on this.
Tom mentioned earlier the purse bid situation. This was the fight where Top Rank just won by like 70 grand. In a multi-million, or not multi, I guess it's multi, no, it's $1.6 million winning bid, I believe it was, to air this fight. Tom, are you gonna speak badly about this fight?
Oh, boy. look, I will be watching this fight. I don't need to shit all over it. I just think it's not a super high skill level fight. I mean, we talked about last weekend how excited I am, at least, for the World Boxing Super Series at 140. Regis Prograis is looking fantastic. Josh Taylor is looking fantastic. Ivan Baranchuk, at least, is a super exciting B-side against those guys. I mean, he's fading Josh Taylor next, and you know, it looks really exciting in the division. Saucedo is a guy who went life and death with Lenny Z in his last fight. Entertaining fight, but there was a period in that fight where it looked like he could have gotten stopped. Conversely, Maurice Hooker... it took the performance of his life to get a split decision against Terry Flanagan. He's looked extremely flat in his career. I don't buy this as really being that important of a fight. I mean, I think the consequences of this is something like between 10 and 15 at 140. I think this is Hooker's fight to lose. I mean, Saucedo looks so vulnerable, is so lacking in defense, has shown a questionable chin. At the same time, Hooker has three draws against very limited opposition throughout his career. Again, did not look like a superstar against Terry Flanagan, although credit to him for getting that win in Manchester. But yeah, I have to say, look, I'll be watching this fight. I won't be watching it live because it's on at midnight. The card starts at midnight on the East Coast, which is not helping anyone. It's just ridiculous. I mean, that is not what the ESPN deal was supposed to promise, was midnight start times two cards. Anyway, your take? I don't know. I just, as far as shitting on it, if y'all want to call that shitting on it, I'm just trying to be objective as far as how I see the fight. But I don't think it'll be the worst fight. I mean, Saucedo has never seen a punch he didn't want to eat, so should be reasonably action-packed fight. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be like a fun low-level fight. It just, the only intrigue is what happens to the winner and lose. Well, what happens to the winner?
We know what happens to the winner.
No, if Hooker wins. Yeah, we know what's happened to Saucedo. He'll have a low-level defense, and then he'll get chucked in to get beat by Jose Ramirez. If Hooker wins, then he goes back to the zone and headlines a card against Tommy Coyle.
Well, yeah, he's going to start headlining Matchroom USA cards.
It's like
the worst competition Eddie Hearn can throw him in with.
So it's like a little, in a little the zone versus ESPN plus chess game, this is like two pawns heading up. Like squaring off against each other.
That's a perfect description.
So, in terms of the fight, I think, yeah, I guess Hooker could be favored. I just don't really rate either of them. Saucedo is a fun TV fighter, so I'd probably root for him to win. And he entertained me in his last fight, so I'll have to see, and definitely won't be watching it live either because. I'm still working on UK time, and 12 o'clock Eastern is just a no-go for me these days. So we'll have to see what happens.
On the undercard, this fight is not that interesting. Unlike you guys, I won't complain, and I actually will watch it. And I'll enjoy it because I think it's going to be a good fight. On the undercard, Terrence Crawford's next opponent will be in action as Igis Kavalauskas will fight Roberto Arriaza. And I believe Kavalauskas wins. He fights Crawford. And if he loses, then probably Arriaza will fight Crawford because he will have pulled off a big upset. The following night, Saturday night, we have a big Matchroom USA card headlined by Jarrell Miller facing Bogdan Dinu. And also Gabriel Rosado will face Luis Arias. Brandon Rios versus Canelo's brother, Ramon Alvarez. Clarissa Shields defends her titles against Hannah Rankin. And Nico Hernandez is also on the card. And I implore you and I invite you to check out NicoGear.us. Check out some of his gear. Also, connect with him on LinkedIn if you have LinkedIn. You can find him on there. Guys, you can talk about one fight, but I'm not going to go through each fight. So you guys can talk about one fight. Which one you want?
I'm going to jump in here very quickly. I was at the kickoff press conference for this. It was sort of a guerrilla press conference.
Prior
to the Danny Jacobs fight. Very funny circumstances, like because you know that was an HBO card, and this was a DAZN like press conference. Like they had it off in a corner of MSG. Very weird circumstances. They had it basically in like the side of a bar that was closed in the MSG building. What a fucking mess this card is. I just there's no other way that I can say it. I mean, they had just the motley crew, the motliest of crews, assembled up on the stage. You know, no one seemed to know who was fighting who. Brandon Rios didn't know which Alvarez brother he was fighting. Literally,
he was fighting Canelo.
Well, he was like, I think I'm fighting one of Canelo's brothers. I don't know which one. I mean, clearly he wasn't that concerned with the level of competition against him.
He must be fighting Sam Eggington until Eggington got beat.
Well, I mean, but this whole thing, again, Gabriel Rosado against Luis Arias. I mean, Arias was wearing a Jason Voorhees mask. It was just a shit show. Yeah, I guess, but it was like they were trying to drum up. I mean, Eddie Hearn was trying to drum up. I mean, it's really funny to get a sense of like how much Eddie Hearn values his own promotional ability. Like he was trying to like drum up the rivalries in all of these fights. I mean, like Clarissa Shields is fighting Hannah Rankin, who was beaten by Alicia Napoleon in her last fight
She's got seven pro fights too.
Yeah, I mean, 5-2 record. He's trying to make that into, you know, one of the top fights in women's boxing. Like, it was just what a shit show again. And it's funny to me. I think back to like the early days of the PBC, how people would get mad at the level of some of the matchmaking. When really, you look back, really nothing to be ashamed of when you compare it to like the average top rank ESPN card, or certainly the average DAZN USA card, Matchroom USA card on DAZN. And then you look at this. I mean, this would have to beat Superfly 3 if you want to consider these Matchroom USA DAZN cards as being like premium cable level, sort of equivalent of like a Showtime HBO card. I mean, this is by far the worst of any card that's supposed to be at that level of the year. I mean, definitely worse than Superfly 3. It will probably be eclipsed in terms of bragging rights for worst fight of the year on premium cable by the HBO's outgoing fight with the Cecilia Brakus main event and Roman Gonzalez in a doubleheader against nothing B-sides. But yeah, just what a mess. And again, like, we joke about some of these fights being to less than 10,000 viewers. I mean, look, realistically, this could be to hundreds of viewers in the U.S. and its own USA. I mean, this is just, what is the point of this?
You're really flirting with that lawsuit right now, Tom. I'm telling you,
he's not Frank
the papers
Warren.
Will be coming soon. Yeah, we'll see. Eddie's becoming more bitter in his old age.
One more question, Angela. What was with that deep cut throwing out the Nico Hernandez LinkedIn? Did he mention that on a conference call or something?
No, but I was just doing my research today and found out he's on LinkedIn. Check out his website, which is hilarious, and he has a gear shop, which I encourage you to buy stuff from. It was just part of doing research, guys. You know,
I have to say, his gear is solid for sure. If you are,
I don't know about that. You don't take Tom's word for it, listener. Go to the website nicogear.us. Make up your own mind. Specifically, if you like collared shirts that button up. Short sleeve collared up shirts, specifically if you like logos that remind you of another logo. Not gonna say what it is.
One very quick thing, just another tidbit from that press conference. This, for anyone who doesn't know, this was originally going to be a Nico Hernandez main event local card in Kansas, and Hearn, on like 2 days notice, decided to co-promote the event. They moved it to a bigger venue. Hearn said repeatedly that this will be the biggest boxing match in Kansas in years, which is
probably true.
Maybe true, but a dubious distinction. But anyway, that's the connection with Nico Hernandez. He was originally the headliner against an 8-7 fighter. Now he's, you know, going to be somewhere in the middle of the card. You know, he'll probably be second to last up. I can definitely see that. But Jarrell Miller in a main event, two undefeated fighters. You can't knock that, at least. I mean, that is at least a headline fight on this level of a card, two undefeated heavyweights. Anyway, back to you guys.
Well, also, Nico was like the lone guy from the American Olympic team who specifically who won a medal, who didn't wind up with any promoter. Nobody wanted him. And, you know, even like the Charles Conwells of the world, they got promotional deals, but not Nico, who actually won a medal.
Too light.
Yeah, he's a flyweight. So, like, naturally, nobody really is going to... Olympians tend to get more than some random guy who just won the Golden Gloves as like a signing bonus and as a feature because they're Olympians. But at the same time, with Nico, there's no promise that it pays off. I think all the promoters understand that there's like, if you can't get a flyweight for cheap, you probably don't want them until they've established themselves. And so that's why Nico's just been headlining his own cards in Kansas City or Kansas, wherever he's from, whatever. And then Eddie comes to town and, you know, as Tom said, they're like, well, we're going to do the biggest event in Kansas history. There will be hundreds of people here. The second biggest event in the tri-state area next to the county fair.
Yeah, we're not going to have dozens of people. Hundreds of people. That's big time in Kansas. Actually, one important thing to jump in just to touch on that. So this is not a title fight. Hernandez isn't at that level yet. But there is an interesting thing that we've seen, which has been sort of, if you listen to interviews, Luda Bella actually spoke about this in a very interesting interview on the Chris Mannix podcast, that both the ESPN Plus deal and Hearn's deal with DAZN, they get payment benefits for having title fights, which is why you've seen Top Rank show these lighter weight fights, and why it seems likely now that they are pushing to get more women's title fights in the case of Hearn showing Clarissa Shields on this, and angling to have Nico Hernandez, who could potentially be a titleist at the lighter weights. So it's something, you know, Hearn talks about, oh, $1 billion deal, $125 million license fee for a year, which, by the way, is a number he never even said. That was just rough math done by the media. Well, yeah, I mean, we were, messaging the day division, of that brother. Press conference, but they need to have titleists to get paid. I mean, still, Top Rank is not the one writing the checks. They're still getting paid by ESPN. Seemingly the same thing with Hearn with DAZN. So they still have, incentive structures built into these deals. So that's why you're seeing some of these weird title fights where you're like, why do they care so much about this? Okay, it's a paper title, but they're treating it like it's the Super Bowl. And again, Nico Hernandez is a guy who no one cared about him when he left the Olympics. No major promoter signed him. But if he's a guy who could win a title and they could get an extra bit of money out of these networks, that's why you start to see him mattering.
Yep. And that's why you've seen them bring in these international fights that you're probably thinking to yourself, who is watching this? Well, doesn't matter.
No one. Doesn't the matter. Obvious answer, but yes, helps them get money out of the network.
You know, ESPN doesn't know the difference. Their executives have no freaking clue. You know, they just look at amount of title fights. Okay, was it a guy that we promote? No. Okay, but it was a title fight, and title fights must mean something. So that's this card. The Gabriel Rosado fight versus Luis Arias fight is going to be horrible in my prediction. I just feel like those guys are just going to have a real boring fight. The Rios Alvarez fight should be fun. And then Miller could, I have no clue how that fight will go, but, yeah, that's the card this week. That's all the boxing. Babs, thanks for coming on. Tom, thanks for coming on. More content coming your way. Patreon.com/Sunday Puncher. Tom, I was thinking of releasing the hook since we have very little boxing, or at least no big time boxing this week. I was thinking of releasing one of the episodes of the hook on the main feed, or at least a portion of it to tell people what that's all about, because a new episode is coming this week. What do you think of that idea?
I think you should do it on like a 3-month delay, something like that. Those are excellent for anyone who isn't on Patreon who hasn't heard them. Every one is extremely well researched and worth listening to. But yeah, give them a taste.
All right. Well, that's it for this week, and we will be back next week.
Thanks for having me on. Talk to you later, guys. Good talking to you, Babs.
Say bye, Babs.
All right, take care. It's your birthday. We're going to party like it's your birthday. We're going to sip Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give a fuck if that's your birthday. You'll find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the X. Get in and take the drugs. I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug.